Blog Talk Radio.
ultimatesportstalk.com. So welcome to the Blitz, March 16th, 2014. A lot of free agency frenzy. We're going to get to that in a minute here with our co-host, Erica Lynn Anderson, which her team was part of the mix of the free agent frenzy. Erica, are you on the air?
I'm here. Hello, everybody.
Awesome. So, Erica, we're going to talk a little bit of free agency frenzy going on. We're going to have at backseat coach coming up here in a couple minutes here, talking WFA, IWFL 2014 season. That'll kick off in April for those leagues. Also, we would like to mention we are excited. March 18th is our one-year anniversary. Technically, today is our one-year anniversary of Gridiron Beauties Radio on Blog Talk Radio. So great job on everybody's part in terms of getting us on the air and getting us on there. So so that hats off to us today, and thank you for Erica to being part of it as well in the short term that we've been on her. One year, it's gone by too fast.
It's awesome.
Yeah, so the other thing we're going to talk about at the end is we'll just have the news and notes of some of the games that are coming up this next week on March 22nd. So we'll touch base on that towards the last part of the 30-minute segment. But let's get into it, Erica. The Patriots literally lost Tlaib to Denver, but then they picked up Revis Island, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Brandon Browner we picked up, too. You know, I wasn't all that upset to see Tlaib go, to be honest. He spent a lot, you know, he spent some time last year hurt. I felt like he missed some really key, really key plays. I just felt like he wanted big money, and he just wasn't quite worth it. I cannot believe the amount of money that Denver's spending on him. I just was aghast at that, to be honest. It's too much. I don't think you should – he's not worth that, to be honest. So, Revis, you know, we'll see. I was kind of, you know, so-so about it. Belichick kind of has a way of kind of getting people to fall in line and do their part. So I think it'll be okay. I think it'll be good.
Yeah, Revis, I think it's a good fit. I know he's injury-prone in some ways, but Belichick has a tendency to not use him on every down. So it's only going to be crucial downs. You know what I mean? So I think it was a good fit there. They didn't lose much money in terms of acquiring him. He is a threat. So based on where they place him in terms of, you know, in-game activity, I think that was a good fit for them. I agree, Tlaib, not a staple. So Denver, Denver will find out whether, you know, like you said, whether they wasted the money on that or whether he actually, contributes to the set. The surprise for me was DeMarcus Ware, the Cowboys. I figured he'd retire there, but Denver picks up a pretty good pass rusher in that sense.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's another one I think they'll have to see how he kind of fits in and how he does. It's hard. I think Cowboys, you know, the environment there is kind of it's a weird environment, and the Cowboys never seem to me like they're very team oriented. Like it seems like it's really very individualistic. And so having these big playmakers, or, you know, how they were on that team, go from an individualistic society to a team that really is all about team, I think will kind of be the test and to see how he fits in there.
Well, I think they're building the Manning Wall. They're really setting up for the Manning Wall. Basically, they're giving them some key people on defense to really contribute to that. And at the same time, they're really structured this. I think this draft, they're going to be structured offensively, offensive line-minded, just to make sure that they give Peyton Manning some protection. The other one is Eric Decker leaving Denver to the Jets. What did you think of that?
That was ridiculous. Okay, I knew Decker was going to leave, so that was not a surprise. But why he went to the Jets, I'm like, they don't have a quarterback to even get the ball to him. I don't know what he thinks is going to happen there. I just felt like it was a huge mistake for him. I mean, he has so much talent, and I really feel like it's wasted in New York. I mean, I don't know. I was actually hoping the Patriots might pick him up, but he probably wanted too much money. We re-signed Edelman, which I was happy about, but I felt like that was a mistake on his part. But
well, you know, there's a double-edged sword. He either assumed with his agent that this was the better fit money-wise long-term, which he did get a deal. Now we will see the production and the evolution of Geno Smith. So we will see whether Geno Smith is able to utilize a caliber player like Decker in the system. And given Rex Ryan's output and record, it hasn't been that successful in New York. So it will either be a wasted year for him in terms of getting into the playoffs and returning to a prominent state, which Denver at that point had. So now it's going to be a situation whether he made the right decision to go to New York, a la Brett Favre, a la everybody else that's gone to New York.
I don't know. I don't think the receivers are the problem in New York. And that's where everyone says, hey, let's get receivers, that'll fix our problems. And the problems stem at, one, the coaching level. That level right there is poisoning everything below it. And, you know, Geno Smith, I think being in New York, we haven't had a chance to see. I mean, he's been so-so, but is it really fair to say he's not that great of a quarterback because he's been in New York where, you know, Rex Ryan's systems are, you know, crap, essentially. I think being in that type of system, it'd be hard to look good, you know? So it's hard, I think.
Yeah, and then you also had Steve Smith branch out from Carolina to Baltimore, which I thought that was a good fit. He's aging. They can use him in pretty much any other facet. He still has mobility and speed, not the go-to guy, so he could be literally a weapon in a lot of schemes. So I thought that was a plus there for Baltimore. It was a good pickup, basically, for Baltimore, I think, Steve Smith.
I think so, too.
The other surprise was Seattle, Golden Tate going to, I think, the Lions, which, if I was him, I would have just taken a pay cut in Seattle, knowing that that's going to be a caliber good team. Going to the Lions, there's a lot of question marks there.
I think it was about the money, to be honest. Typically wide receivers, in my opinion, they shouldn't get a ton of money, especially the smaller receivers. You know, they're injury prone. They're kind of put at risk, and it's hard to sign them real long term and give them a lot of money. So the fact that the Lions paid Golden Tate that much money and gave him that long of a contract, that's what he wanted, and I don't think Seattle was willing to. But, you know, you got to kind of say, okay, do I want money and security, or would I rather kind of take a chance and be on a good team? Some people choose money and security, which it looks like Golden Tate did. So.
Yeah, and then the surprising, the rebuild in Chicago, which is Lovie Smith taking on Josh McCown. McCown has a very good record in the short term, so we'll see how he evolves with the Lovie Smith system in Tampa. I think that's a good fit down there for him.
I do, too. I've been excited by what Tampa Bay has done. I think Lovie Smith is good there. I think, what Lovie Smith is doing down there, it's exciting. I think Tampa Bay fans should be really excited about what's going on. I think we're going to see a completely different Tampa Bay team than we did last year going 0-8 at the beginning of the season.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then Julius Peppers going to the Packers, that was a blow for the Bears fans. But overall, I mean, he is decreasing in age. But it's a good, I think it's a good fit for Green Bay to pick up. It's a quality pickup. If he stays healthy, he's obviously a beast, just no different than DeMarcus Ware.
I think so, too. And then, the Patriots picking up Brandon LaFell. I was pretty excited about that.
Yeah, so, a lot of the moves the first week, kind of surprising, and then everybody gets in the mix after that. So we'll see how this week works out in terms of other names that are popping up. I think a lot of the teams were strapped for cap money, given Denver had, obviously excess. So there's a flip side there. The people that could spend money ended up spending money, and the people that are obviously on the cap restriction at that point are really going to be looking at the draft to kind of fill in their holes. Do you know if our guest is on? Okay, let's bring on at Backseat Coach at the No Joke Football Huddle. The No Joke Football Huddle is brought to you by Zazzle.com/Gridiron Beauties. You can go there now, and you can get 17% off until Monday, which is the 17th, St. Patrick's Day. Use St. Pat Day 2014. The Backseat, are you on, Backseat Coach?
I am. Can you hear me, Oscar?
Oh, of course. Thank you for making the time today. Backseat Coach, big-time Boston Militia fan, and follows pretty much everything in the U.S. scene. And so I appreciate you making the time today and coming on board on our show.
Well, I want to thank you for inviting me. I'm really excited to talk about a little bit of women's football. The WFA and the IWFL have exciting seasons ahead, so very eager to talk about it.
So, Backseat, we have Erica Lynn Anderson, my co-host, as well, so she'll jump in here if that's the case as well. So tell us a little bit about the scene. We got some folding teams. I'm assuming it's an economic issue, not necessarily an organization. Some teams, we're talking Dallas as an example, staple teams since 2009, and all of a sudden now they're not going to field the team this year. So tell us a little bit about what's going on with the folding of the teams that you know of.
Well, it's almost an epic, it seems, in the WFA, the Women's Football Alliance. There are almost 15 teams that have folded, including 9 of last year's playoff teams. So you have to raise an eyebrow and kind of wonder what's going on. And I wish I had the answers, but it's a remarkable contraction in the size of the league. The WFA, at its largest, was over 60 teams, and now it's closer to 40. It's like 41 teams now. And we might still see a few more franchises fold, if not before the season, then sometime during the season. And the biggest problem, I think, for the teams individually are the roster sizes. They just don't have enough people to operate. And in terms of the teams that have folded, in the West, the two finalists in the Western Conference last year, the Dallas Diamonds and the St. Louis Slam, are not fielding a team this year. So that's obviously going to change the playoff picture quite drastically in the West. Additionally,
now, to your point, some of these things we don't know at this point, whether it's logistics or organizational, but given the stability of those franchises, you would have think that those would be the staple teams that would have stayed versus new teams that obviously were sprung up onto the scene this year.
Absolutely, you're absolutely right, Oscar. I mean, the Dallas Diamonds have been around for over a decade. They have championships under their belt, just the same as the Sacramento Sirens. Those are really two organizations that have sort of been the flag bearers of women's football for a long time. So it was a little bit surprising and shocking to hear that they wouldn't be fielding teams this year.
Yeah, and you also have the IWFL that hasn't, posted their schedule yet. So we're looking at a little bit of turmoil in both leagues, which are the premier leagues in the country. So I don't know if that's internally, with the commissioner mentality, the organization. There's still a lot of question marks coming into the season. That's all, and it's kind of concerning because, like you said, there's a lot of teams that are staple teams. I know Pittsburgh moved to the IWFL. I can understand why. you know, because obviously the division's a little tougher. The division was tougher in the WFA, so that might be a choice there. But that makes sense. But overall, the concern is there. I mean, after having the WFA the last 2 years, you know, on ESPN3, as well as playing at Heinz Field, you would have thought that we were going forward, not back.
Yeah, you would have thought that. I mentioned in a tweet that, being the top league in women's football is a pendulum that kind of swings. And just if you look into the history of women's football, I mean, leagues have come and gone, and teams often outlast the leagues that they play in and go on to play in another league. And there are some teams in the league that have probably existed in five different leagues over the lifetime of the team. So this is women's football. It's a little bit hectic sometimes. Sometimes it's a little unstable. But it seems to me that the leagues deliver good football in the end, you know. I don't have a lot of concerns about the IWFL not posting their schedule yet. It's just a hard thing to do. And Lisa King over at the WFA has, you know, had to tinker with the schedule a lot because of teams that have folded and other matters. So I know we're going to see a great schedule from IWFL, and that it's going to be a really interesting season over there with the Pittsburgh Passion and the New York Sharks and the Utah Jinx, all playoff teams in the WFA last year, moving over to the IWFL this year.
Yeah, and the scene, I think, go ahead, Erica.
So these teams folding, I'm assuming it's due to financial reasons, right?
I'm pretty sure financial reasons are part of that, but I think mostly it's players. They didn't have enough players. They saw the writing was on the wall that they wouldn't be able to get through a full season, because after you take into account injuries and things like that, you can't get to the end of the season. It's not really a good idea to start the season.
Oh, because I guess I was just curious as to, like, I know the women don't get paid, and so how exactly the financial structure, like how these teams are financed, and if, like, the WSA and the IFL, if they make money, like the NFL makes money, like the NFL is considered nonprofit, but the teams actually finance the league. Is that how is it structured the same in the women's game?
Well, the first thing we have to say is, like, obviously the money compared to the NFL, it's not even close to the money. The teams and the players in the women's league pay a fee to play and participate, and that money it is used for travel, and it goes to the administration of the teams and the leagues, and to be able to pay for coaches and, you know, pay to have a field to play on. And all these other things. So when we talk about finances in women's football, I think for the most part we're talking about the ability to travel. Now, the teams don't travel that far during the regular season, but during the playoffs, you know, if you run out of teams in your immediate geographical region, you have to pay up and to travel to get a hotel. You know, you're paying for food for people. That's where the finances really sort of start to bite. It's not so much, I think, during the regular season, but if you get into the playoffs, being able to afford it. Mm. A lot of teams can't. They reach the playoffs, and if they can't travel to an away game, they forfeit that game. And it's kind of sad.
Oh, wow.
But that's the reality.
Yeah. I just figured somebody's got to be making money, right? Like, somebody, right, in the organization. It may not be the teams, but obviously the players, but I was just wondering where that money, I guess.
Yeah, the only thing I know for certain is that it's not me.
Good.
All right, I was just curious.
So, at backseat, what will be the state of the league this year in your eyes? You think we'll have the retractions that you're talking about? Think we're going to have a little bit more of that as we get closer to the playoff season and in the summertime? Do you think that's going to be the case at this point with both leagues?
I think there might be, you know, a few teams always kind of peel off in the middle of the season getting toward the playoffs. But I don't think there's anything at risk like having a halt to the season or anything like that. I'm not really sure. I think maybe in the WFA, I'm not sure what the playoff structure is going to be like. Last year they had a playoff bracket that had 26 teams in it, and I think they might maybe downscale that to 20 teams, but it's not public knowledge what the playoff brackets are going to be comprised of, so I'm not really sure.
All right. I've been trying to reach to get somebody on the radio from the WFA office, from the IWFL office. Have been no return calls at this point. I tried reaching them about a year ago, 6 months ago. I'm trying to get somebody just to give us a perspective as to how the front office of the league supports the teams, because I'm assuming there's a structure there that has to be taken, and I'm talking about a marketing end of it, you know, promoting the sport. And you would think that the best teams that they've had out there, the Dallases and everybody else, if they really needed some support, those would be the franchises that they would be taking into account. But, you know, well, because of the short time that we have today, we can come back on a different day and discuss that more completely. But do you feel at this point, Boston will be a front runner just like Chicago? Do you think Militia is going to be in that mix like every year they are? I mean, they've been a very stable team for years.
Absolutely. In the Women's Football Alliance, I see. I'm not going to make any predictions for the championship game, but I'm seeing Chicago and Boston having a rematch for the conference championship in the East. Whereas in the West, it's going to be different. Like I said before, the two conference finalists last year are not playing, so I think we'll probably see the Kansas City Titans be in the mix there. I'm pretty sure they're going to reach the Western Conference Finals. And the way I'm looking at it now...
You still got to find San Diego in the mix because, I mean,
yeah.
San Diego's always a good team. So,
you know, you've got San Diego, you've got the Central Cal War Angels who are rising, and the Seattle Majestics cannot be ignored. That if those three end up in the same bracket, I don't know who's going to come out of that bracket.
All right, so I really appreciate you making the time today. What I'm going to do is we'll touch base on during the season and see how things evolve, if you're willing and able. That way we can kind of touch base in turn during the season and see where things are at, kind of, you know, put a perspective on the fans that are following the women's game and give us give insights as to what we think is going to be something that's going to go forward. So I appreciate you making the time today. We have a lot of followers that love you on Twitter. And we appreciate that you made the time for us on our radio show today.
Well, I thank you for your camaraderie and your support, Oscar. Thank you very much.
All right. We look forward to another chat in a couple weeks here, hopefully, if that's the case. I know you're a busy man, so we will touch base with you and then kind of set up another date and time, and then we can talk women's gridiron once again. And it's going to be an exciting season, like you said, with a lot of question marks, but ultimately, as we get into the playoffs, it's always an exciting time with both leagues.
Absolutely. I'd love to talk with you again.
All right. Thank you for your time. Have a great Sunday. We appreciate it. And enjoy the weather up in the Northeast. Stay safe.
Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Austin.
All right, Erica. So, go ahead.
We have somebody else on the line. Were you expecting anybody else to call?
No, at this point. I know, do we have any short time at this point? I don't know how many minutes we got left at this within the time frame that we have.
We got about 5 minutes.
All right, let's put them on. We'll give them about a minute or two. Welcome to Greater Beauty's Blitz on Block Talk Radio. This is Oscar Lopez on with Erica Lynn Anderson.
Hey, guys. It's Scott with the Seattle Majestics.
Scotty, what's up, buddy? How's it going today?
Hey, man.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I was actually I was listening to you guys on the radio with Backseat Coach, and there was some talk of how the WFA structure comes up, how these teams support the league or the league supports vice versa. So I thought I'd call in and give my 2 cents on that.
All right, so Scott, I'm going to give you 30 seconds because we got a little short time, or otherwise we can go ahead and reschedule for in another week or so, and then give us a clarity on it. That would be great.
Yeah, I'll give you a quick, like, you know, 20, 30-second answer. The basics of it is the teams pay league fees. That money goes to the league. There has been question from a number of teams about how that money gets used. Some of it goes to help pay for the championship teams that play in the finals. But there are questions about it that are out there. A number of teams have asked the owners, and this would go either AFL and WFA, so I don't really think it matters. But from the league supporting the individual teams, though, there's no money that comes back to us. It's basically us that help fund the league.
All right, so it's kind of like a nonprofit status in a lot of ways with no central brain.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, backseat coach mentioned money going to the coaches, and you know, there isn't any of that. I would imagine most of the coaches that are in the league are volunteer coaches that come from high school staffs or what have you. And the teams will usually take care of their travel and or, you know, whatever clothing they have that they want to wear on the sidelines. But aside from that, I would imagine that there's probably not a whole lot of coaches that get paid regularly.
All right, so, Scott, what we're going to do is we will reschedule, just like we're going to do with the backseat coach. Let me know what Sunday you're available, and then we can go ahead and have another 15, 20-minute conversation on what's going on with the league. I know you guys are about to kick off in April here. So
we are.
Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. And we will touch base maybe this week, and then we'll see if we can schedule maybe April 5th or anytime during April. Kind of touch base on that, because I know it's interesting, especially right now with the teams folding and everything kind of getting shuffled in terms of the schedule. We really want to keep the fans engaged as to, you know, who's still in the mix and who's not, and what kind of, you know, divisions we're looking at in terms of the competitions.
Yeah, I think it'd be a good idea, like, it would be to have, you know, somebody like backseat coach on where we can, and an owner from, you know, either league, I guess, one of the team owners on, just to have that kind of open dialogue, because I think that that's something that, as you see on the message boards, that's something that a lot of people want to talk about. Everybody has their own take, but, you know, the only thing talking about it can do is hopefully progress the sport long term. So I'll look forward to coming back on it anytime.
So we will do a one-hour format starting in the middle of April, so that will help us out a lot. That will give us at least a 60-minute branch, and that we can actually create a forum where we can go back and forth in terms of ideas as well. So. All right, Scott,
perfect.
Thank you for calling in. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Have a great Sunday up in the Northwest. So, Erica, we got a couple minutes here. Let's see what's going on with Gridiron Girls.
All right. We, you know, we're just finishing up, you know, our book. We, you know, I talked about that last week. So we are hoping to get that out in April sometime. It will be in a digital format. So basically Kindle and any Kindle app is where we're going to start with that. We're really excited about it. It's you know, for basic beginners, you know, really our mission with Gridiron Girl is to, you know, encourage women to love the game through learning the game. And so I feel like women who say they don't like it probably don't understand it. So that's really our mission with the book and really our mission in general with writing. So. That's what our big project is right now.
Awesome. I want to remind everybody, you can go to our Facebook page. Everything coming up for March 22nd in the Women's Scene internationally. That's in Guam. The two leagues in Guam kicked off this week, the WTFL and the WFL of Guam, as well as the big matchup, the rematch in Spain, Barbera Rookies taking on the Black Demons of the LNFA. So there's a lot of action coming up. Keep tabs on it on Twitter as well as our Facebook page. Thank you, everybody, for networking and giving us the opportunity to post those things as well as keep everybody informed with the women's game. We appreciate everybody's feedback. For Erica Lynn Anderson and Oscar Lopez, we will see you guys next week on Gridiron Blitz, where we're going to talk LFL with Pete Richmeyer, former LFL 360 editor, and we will talk LFL all 30 minutes next week. getting ready for the April 5th kickoff as well in the U.S. So thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it. And thanks for Scott McCarron calling in, as well as at Backseat Coach. Looking forward to next week. Have a great Sunday, everybody.
Bye, everybody.